Of the Absolute, text 23. Rudranam Shankaraha Cha Asmi Vitta Ishaha Yaksha Rakshasam वसूनां पावकः च अस्मि मेरुः शिखरिणां अहम् रुद्राणां शंकरश्चास्मि वित्तेशो यक्षरक्षसाम् वसूनां पावकश्चास्मि मेरुः शिखरिणामहम् रुद्राणां शंकरश्चास्मि वित्तेशो यक्षरक्षसाम् वसूनां पावकश्चास्मि मेरुः शिखरिणामहम् प्लीज चैंट
रुद्राणां शंकरश्चास्मि
मेरुः
मेरुशिखरिणामहम् रुद्राणां शङ्करस्यास्मि वित्तेषो यक्षरक्षसाः वसूनां मेरुः शिखरिणामहम्
माताजि
रुद्राणां शङ्करस्यास्मि पावकस्यास्मि मेरुशिखरिणामहम् रुद्राणां शङ्करस्यास्मि वित्तेषो यक्षरक्षसाम् वसूनां पावकस्यास्मि मेरुशिखरिणामहम्
रुद्राणां
ऑफ ऑल द
रुद्रस्
शङ्करः
लॉर्ड शिव
च
ऑल्सो
अस्मि
आई
एम
वित्त ईशः
द लॉर्ड ऑफ द
ट्रेजरर्
I beg your pardon,
the Lord of the
Treasury
of the
demigods,
Yaksha
Rakshasam,
of the
Yakshas
and Rakshasas,
Vasunam,
of the
Vasus,
Pavakaha,
fire,
Cha,
also,
Asmi,
I am,
Meruhu,
Meru,
Shikharinam,
of all mountains,
Aham,
I am.
Translation and purport also by Srila Prabhupada.
Of all the Rudras,
I am Lord Shiva.
Of the Yakshas and Rakshasas,
I am the Lord of Wealth,
Kubera.
Of the
Vasus, I am
Fire,
Agni.
And of
the mountains, I am
Meru.
Purport.
There are
11 Rudras,
of whom
Shankara,
Lord Shiva,
is predominant.
He is
the incarnation of the
Supreme Lord
in charge of the
mode of ignorance
in the universe.
The
leader of the Yakshas
and Rakshasas
is Kubera,
the
master treasurer
of the
demigods,
and
he is a
representation
of the Supreme Lord.
Meru
is a mountain
famed
for its
rich
natural resources.
ओम
ज्ञानतिमिरांधस्य
ज्ञानांजनशलाकय
चक्षुरुन्मीलितं
येन
तस्मै
श्रीगुरवे नमः
श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं
स्थापितं
येन भूतले
स्वयं
रूपकदा
मह्यं
ददाति
स्वपदान्तिकं
वन्देऽहं
श्रीगुरुः
श्रीयुतपदकमलं
श्रीगुरुं
च क्षमांश्च
श्रीरूपं
साग्रजातं
सहगणरघुनाथान्वितं
तं सजीवम्
साद्वैतं
सावधूतं
परिजनसहितं
कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं
श्रीराधाकृष्णपादां
सहगणललिता
श्रीविशाखान्वितांश्च
वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च
कृपासिन्धुभ्य
एव च
पतितानां
पावनेभ्यो
वैष्णवेभ्यो
नमो नमः
जय
श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभो
नित्यानन्द
श्री
अद्वैतगदाधर
श्रीवासादिगौरभक्तवृन्द
हरे
कृष्णा
कृष्ण
कृष्ण
हरे हरे
हरे
राम
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 हरे हरे
हरे
कृष्णा
सो
इन दिस 10th
चैप्टर
वी आर
हियरिंग कृष्णा
डिस्क्राइबिंग
हिज
ओन ऑपुलेंसेस
श्रील
विश्वनाथ
चक्रवर्ती ठाकुर
हैज एक्सप्लेन्ड
that
from the 7th
chapter of the
Bhagavad Gita,
Krishna
has been
explaining
the process of
bhakti,
and
also he
has been somewhat
speaking
about
his opulences
as well.
More
specifically in the
9th chapter,
which is titled
The Most
Confidential Knowledge,
Krishna
has in
more detail
described
the confidential
process of bhakti yoga.
Having concluded this discussion on devotional service, on himself, and on the devotee, now Krishna enters the 10th chapter, wherein he wants to elaborate on his own opulences in order that his devotee's faith and devotion may increase. And therefore this chapter is entitled Vibhuti Yoga. Vibhuti means opulences, especially those extraordinary opulences of which this material manifestation is composed. Everything is the opulence of Krishna, as he has explained in this chapter. But still, Arjuna has been seeking something specific to hear. Arjuna is a pure devotee of the Lord, an eternal associate, and this whole conversation has actually been going on for our benefit, for the benefit of the conditioned souls of this world. It's only a devotee who can understand Krishna's personal form and love Krishna as he is. Others cannot. And the non-devotees, the materialists, they cannot conceive anything beyond this material manifestation. So Arjuna wants to, for the benefit of everyone in this world, request Arjuna or Krishna to describe how he pervades this entire creation. A person who is not spiritually inclined, who is not a devotee, finds it hard to accommodate the idea of God being a spiritual person with a spiritual form and so on, in whom one must repose all one's devotion. People, generally speaking, are quite materialistic, and they are apt to see things around them with that vision. So now Arjuna wants the people of this world to see Krishna's all-pervading nature in the things around, in the universe, as manifested in the physical things of this world. That's the only way they can relate to it, and at least in this way there will be some connection. They will make that connection and gradually perhaps make advancement in many lives. And as far as a devotee is concerned, he or she would love to hear this about Krishna because it's about Krishna. Everything about Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada has explained in some of the previous purports, is nectar. It is relishable. So devotees like to hear anything about Krishna, and especially when Krishna speaks it himself, it's all the more relishable. And this increases the devotion of the devotees, makes their faith very strong. So for the sake of both the non-devotees and the devotees, Arjuna is eliciting from Krishna a brief description of his own glories and opulences. And Krishna has cautioned in the beginning that my opulences are unlimited. It's impossible for you to understand all my opulences. But Krishna says, Arjuna says, well, something at least. So then Krishna says, all right, I will tell you only the principal opulences of mine, pradhanyataha, only the main opulences I will briefly mention. And then Krishna begins speaking about it from text 20. So from text 20 onwards, we are seeing Krishna talking about his vibhutis or his opulences, and specifically how he can be seen in the physical representations of this material cosmos. So in the earlier verses he had described himself in various ways. He has already said that he is a super soul seated in the hearts of all living entities. He is the beginning, the middle and end of all living beings. Of the Adityas he says he is Vishnu. Of lights he is the sun. Of Maruts he is Marichi. Of the stars he is the moon, and so on. And now in this verse,
he is also giving us some categories. This world is full of categories. There's mountains, there's animals, there's kings, there's warriors, there's weapons. So there is categories of so many things and so many people. So Krishna wants to illustrate through this list of opulences that he is a superlative in all the categories, the best in every category. The most intelligent of the intelligent, Krishna is the intelligence of that person. But does it mean that the intelligence of one who is average doesn't come from Krishna? It also does. But still, people are impressed by the display of something extraordinary. If there's someone who is super brilliant, then everyone is amazed. Oh, just see how brilliant this person is, how much intelligence this person has. So when people admire or appreciate such a thing, they should remember actually it's Krishna's intelligence. If somebody is very powerful, that power can also attract others and astonish others. So Krishna says, I am the power of the powerful. But Krishna doesn't mean that he is not the power of those who are less powerful. Power everywhere comes from him. Whether somebody is less powerful or more powerful, Krishna is the source of that power. But particularly, because when Krishna's power manifests to a greater degree in a tiny human being, that astonishes everybody. So Krishna wants to remind us through that display, that is my power, please remember. So therefore Krishna is mentioning himself as the superlative or the best in each of the many, many categories that he has identified. So here the first category in today's verse is the Rudras. He says, Rudranam Shankarah Cha Asmi. Among all the Rudras, I am Shankara, a Lord Shiva. In the Mahabharata also it is explained that Rudra is a fierce aspect of Shankara or Lord Shiva, whose work is particularly at the time of destruction of the universe. It's a ferocious form and is full of anger, because destruction takes place only when there is anger. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 3rd canto, 12th chapter, there is a description of how Rudra appeared. When Brahma was contemplating the act of creation of this world, then he first created his eldest sons, the 4 Kumaras. And since he wanted to populate the universe with living beings, he instructed his 4 sons to get married and produce offspring. The 4 Kumaras had other ideas. They didn't want to get entangled in household life, so they preferred to not follow the instruction of their father and guru, Brahma. So Brahma was angry, but because he was such an elevated Brahmana, he tried to control his anger. He was successful, but not entirely. When one is angry, one may try hard to control one's anger, but somehow or the other it manifests. Usually the anger manifests through the eyes. That is an important area where of the part of the body where the anger manifests. So even if the person controls everything else, from the eyes you can understand this person is angry. So Brahma became angry, he controlled himself in every other way. He didn't speak anything, he didn't lift his hands or anything like that, but his eyes revealed his anger. And then because of that, between his, sometimes you see when someone's angry, the eyebrows may get knitted up together. So from between the eyebrows of Brahma came out a very unique living entity, Rudra. Came out as a baby who was mixed in color, blue and red, the Srimad Bhagavatam says. Blue represents the mode of ignorance and red represents the mode of passion, because anger is a mixture of passion and ignorance. So Rudra manifested by Brahma's anger. And as soon as he came out, he was crying. And he asked his father Brahma, please give me a name and please give me some places to stay. And because he was crying, Brahma pacified him. Ma Rudihi, don't cry. And because he said that, don't cry, because he was crying when he was born, had extraordinary birth, of course, through the eyebrows of Brahma. So therefore his name became Rudra. Of course, there are many other meanings of Rudra, one who makes others cry also. That's also another meaning. So in any case, Rudra was born, and then Brahma addressed him and said, all right, your name is Rudra, and you also have 11 other names. And he mentioned so many other names like Manyu, Drita, and so on. One of them was Shiva. So he said, I have allotted these specific places for each of you and your forms. And I've also allotted a specific wife for each of you. So he mentioned the names of the respective wives. So then all these Rudras, they started producing offspring. And each of these offspring were ferocious, very, very angry. And it started creating havoc everywhere, and Brahma became very perturbed. And he said that, enough, enough, this is not the time to display all this anger. The time for you, my dear Rudra, is at the end of the creation, when the universe has to be destroyed. That is the time I will call upon you for this service. So now please, restrain yourself and go and perform austerities. So then somehow or other Rudra controlled himself, circumambulated his father Brahma, and went to perform austerities, and everything quietened down. And Brahma went ahead with the task of creation, thinking that so easily anything can go out of hand. Usually we create something and then we don't know whether what we have created is going to be in our control or not. That happens even for Brahma. We set in motion something and then it turns out to be something quite different from what we expected. Srila Prabhupada explains in his purports in that section of the Srimad Bhagavatam that the nature of anger, and anger comes from the mode of passion and ignorance, specifically from unfulfilled lust and hankering. And this also comes from the false identification with the body. So the sense of egoism actually is the Rudra principle. And Prabhupada explains that this Rudra principle is manifest in different features that we see in this world. Anger, when a person becomes very angry, he moves his hands and legs about and speaks so many things. So that's the Rudra principle that is residing in everybody's heart. We can see the Rudra principle in nature also. When there's a fierce cyclone, raging winds, or the wind blows across the sea and causes huge tidal waves, or there's lashing rains, or there's fierce glare of the sun, like in the middle of the desert. So these are all representations of the Rudra principle. Also snakes, tigers, lion also manifest the Rudra principle, because by nature they're always angry. A snake is always angry for no reason. So it represents the Rudra principle. Sometimes the Rudra principle is manifest even in devotees. And when it's not being used for Krishna's purpose, then it may cause a fall down, Srila Prabhupada says. So one must be very careful that the Rudra principle is used very, very carefully only for Krishna's service and not otherwise. So Rudra is a partial manifestation of Lord Shiva or Lord Shambhu. Lord Shiva, as Prabhupada explains in the purport here, is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord in charge of the mode of ignorance
in the universe. Srila Rupa Goswami has mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna has unlimited qualities. They cannot be counted. But nevertheless, having scanned the different scriptures, Rupa Goswami summarizes all these qualities into 64. And he says Krishna has all these 64 qualities in perfection, in fullness, and nobody else can manifest all these 64 qualities to the degree in perfection that Krishna can. Even Narayan, Lord Vishnu, can manifest only 60 qualities. Krishna exhibits all 64, so naturally whatever qualities are manifest by Narayan are also in Krishna, in greater fullness. The jivas, the living entities, can manifest at the most 50 qualities, and that also only in very infinitesimal quantity. Very tiny, atomic display of these qualities that Krishna has in perfection. There are other five qualities that are present in great personalities like Lord Shiva. So Shiva has a 50 also, in a much larger degree than the jivas do, but he has an extra five qualities. Rupa Goswami mentions this. Sada Svarupa Sampraptaha Sarvagyo Nitya Nutanaha Satchidananda Sandrangaha Sarvasiddhi Nishevitaha. These are the five special qualities that Lord Shiva has that the jivas don't have. And these five qualities are, number one, Sada Svarupa Sampraptaha, that is always situated in his constitutional position. The second one is Sarvajna, that he is all-knowing. The third, Nitya Nutana, he is always young, never old. You also never see Lord Shiva as an old man, just as you don't see Krishna as an old man. Then there is Satchidananda Sandrangaha, which means he has a body of condensed eternity, knowledge and bliss. And finally, Sarva Siddhi Nishevitaha, which means that he is equipped with all mystic powers and potencies. Now, even these five qualities are present in fullness in Krishna, but not in Shiva. So even Shiva doesn't have these five qualities completely. Rupa Goswami says, Anshena Girishadishu, that even Girisha, Lord Shiva, has these qualities only partially. For example then, Krishna's body is Satchidananda Vigraha completely. But Lord Shiva's body is not completely Satchidananda. So there is some little difference there. Krishna is 100% Satchidananda Vigraha, but Lord Shiva is somewhat mixed. And we read Brahma's example of the Brahma Samhita, of the curd and the milk. Lord Shiva is like curd, and Vishnu is like the milk. When an adulterating principle comes in contact with the milk, like lemon or something acidic, then it becomes yogurt or curd. So similarly, Shiva is that form of Vishnu who is in contact with the three modes. Vishnu, when he is aloof from three worlds, from the three modes, he is Vishnu, even in this world. But when Vishnu is in contact with the modes, specifically the mode of ignorance, then he is called Shiva. And this Shiva has many manifestations, particularly the Rudras, because through the Rudra aspect, he annihilates the universe at the proper time. He performs his Tandava dance, and he plays his drum, Dindima drum, also called the Damru, and at that time he is unstoppable. When he plays the dance, he is fiery, and that causes the destruction of the entire creation. So this is the Rudra principle. So because Lord Shiva is ultimately the origin of all the Rudras,
So Krishna says, of all the Rudras, I am Lord Shiva. Rudranam Shankara, Shankaraha cha Asmi. Because Shiva is a superlative Rudra. He is the source, the origin, the topmost of all the Rudras. Then next we come to Kuver. Vittesho Yaksha Rakshasam. Vitta means wealth, Isha means Lord. The Lord of wealth here refers to Kuver, who is the treasurer of the demigods. He is a Yaksha. A Yaksha is a semi-divine class of beings who reside on a higher stratum than the earth. They are not quite demigods, but they're in between the ordinary mortals of this world, of the earth planet, and the demigods like Indra. You have beings, celestial beings like Vidyadharas and Gandharvas and like this. So the Yakshas are also one category. So the head of the Yakshas is Kubera. It is said that Kubera and Ravana were actually half brothers. Brahma had many sons, and one of the sons was Pulastya. One of the sons of Pulastya was Vishrava. Vishrava had some wives. One of the wives was Devavarni, and Devavarni's son was Kuber. So Kuber was also called Vaishravana because he was the son of Vishrava. And Vishrava also had another wife whose name was Keshini. And through Keshini he begot Ravana, Vibhishan, Kumbhakarna and Shurpanaka. So these four were therefore siblings to Kuber. They were half siblings because they shared a common father. Kuber was very wealthy. He even had a celestial chariot called Pushpak, which could travel simply by the instruction of the mind. You just had to call it with your mind and the chariot would be there in front of you. And then you could board it and you didn't have to shout instructions, go left, go right, go up. Simply by understanding the mind of the person sitting inside, the chariot would fly to different places. This is real technology. Advanced technology. And now we think we make a few aeroplanes which crash or which can be hijacked. So then that we are very advanced. So in any case, so Kuber was very, very opulent. Unfortunately, his name was seen in connection with his two sons, Nalukuvar and Manigriva, who because of bad behavior were cursed mercifully by Narad Muni. And they got the mercy of Krishna in Vrindavan. So one time Ravana, he subjugated practically the whole universe, at least many planets in the universe, including his half-brother Kuber. And he stole the Pushpak chariot from his brother. And Kuber was deprived of his kingdom. And then Ravana began to live on Lanka, where Kuber was living earlier. And then Kuber left because he was forcibly dispossessed of his kingdom. Ravana settled there with his siblings and began to terrorize the universe. Meanwhile, Kuber performed a lot of austerities to please Lord Shiva. And then he got a kingdom in the higher planets, which is called Alakapuri, and that is said to be in the higher regions of the Himalayas, in those regions not accessible to human beings, very close to Kailash mountain where Lord Shiva resides. And Kuber continues to be there. He one time gave his mercy to Arjuna and gave him many celestial weapons. So Yakshas are a class of beings, semi-divine beings, and Kuber is supposed to be their chief, and also of Rakshasas. So of all the Yakshas and Rakshasas, Kuber is the chief. So Krishna is saying that I am the chief. I am Kubera, who is the chief among the Rakshasas, and the Yakshas. And then Vasunam Bhavakaha Cha Asmi. Among the Vasus, who are also demigods, there are different categories of demigods. There are the Adityas, who are the sons of Aditi and Kashyap. Then there are the Rudras, whom we have talked about. And there are the Vasus. You may remember the word Vasus in connection with Bhishma, because Bhishma was one of the Vasus, Dyu, who had tried to kidnap a cow from the sage Vasishta. And then they were cursed, especially the elder one. All of them were cursed, but the one who actually physically kidnapped the cow, Nandini, was specifically cursed that he would have to remain there. The others were delivered very quickly by the mercy of Mother Ganga. All these sons, all these Vasus, were born as the sons of Mother Ganga and King Shantanu. And each time the child was born, Ganga would go to the river and place the child in the water, and the child would die because he was drowned. The condition that Ganga had made to King Shantanu before agreeing to marry him was that he would never rebuke her. Whatever she did, he should never rebuke her or scold her or speak harshly to her. Quite a condition. And smitten as he was, the king agreed. With a heavy heart, he would see each time that his wife was taking a newly born child and drowning it in the river, and he was bound by his vow. He couldn't open his mouth, although he was very distraught with grief. Finally, when it was the time of the eighth Vasu, who was actually Bhishma, he could hold himself no longer. So he went and admonished his wife, "Oh cruel woman, why are you doing this? You've already killed seven, now you want to kill another one. At that time she said, "All right, now you've broken your promise, therefore I will no longer be with you." And then she disappeared with the child. King Shantanu was grief-stricken, but he couldn't do anything. And later, many years later, as he was strolling around the banks of the river, he saw that the current of the river had stopped. He went upstream to see the cause of it, and he saw that there was one young boy who had stopped the current of the Ganga with his arrows. And King Shantanu marveled at the feat of this young lad and tried to inquire about his identity, and at that moment Mother Ganga appeared and said, "This is your son. His name is Devavrat. So now you take possession of him, train him up nicely." So Shantanu happily began to take care of Devavrat, who later became known as Bhishma for the terrible vow that he took in order that his father, Shantanu, could marry Satyavati. So in any case, these are the Vasus. And all the Vasus, Krishna says, of all the Vasus, I am Agni, or fire. The Vasus are also demigods of sorts. They also have certain responsibilities in the universal administration. And then finally, Krishna says, Meruhu Shikharinam Aham. Of all the mountains, I am Meru. Meru is also known as Sumeru. It's a mountain made of pure gold. It's not fantasy, it's not a fairy tale. It's pure gold mountain. And it's a huge mountain, and it goes up, I think it's probably, I don't know how many thousands of yojanas high. I don't remember the statistics of its width and all its dimensions, but it's very, very high. And on top of this mountain there is a plateau, and that is where Brahma's seat is. And that's where Brahma produced his sons. So this Meru mountain is considered like the axle or the main rest of the whole universe. Even in our chanting beads, the central bead is sometimes called the Meru bead, because you're not supposed to cross that. once you come to that beat, you turn back. So we're never supposed to cross over and begin the beats from the other side, but we begin from the same side and go backwards. So the Sumeru mountain plays has a very important position in Vedic cosmology. So it's a huge mountain spanning the extent of the universe inside. And Srila Prabhupada makes an important point here that Meru is a mountain famed for its rich natural resources. So among all the mountains in the universe, Meru is the chief. So Krishna says, of all the mountains, I am Meru. So in this way, by giving us different categories that we see of people, objects, etc. in this world, Krishna is illustrating that he can be seen or perceived as the best principle in all these categories. So whatever you see, whatever category you see, see the best in that, remember Krishna. If you see a mountain, so by this logic, this is a mountain, the best mountain in Meru, that is Krishna. So here it's simpler for us living in Vrindavan. Govardhan, Krishna. Similarly, if you're thinking of the destruction of the universe, thinking of all the Rudras, the different categories of demigods, there's Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva represents Krishna. So it's not that these principles are Krishna in the sense that they're not directly the person Krishna, but they represent the opulences and the expansions of Krishna. They represent the energies of Krishna. They are representations of Krishna's opulences in this world, on the physical plane. So through these examples, Krishna is teaching common men how to see his all-pervasive nature in the creation. And for devotees, it's a lesson about how wonderful the Supreme Lord is and how much worthy of our devotion he is. And then Krishna will continue in the subsequent verses about further description of his opulences. So we'll stop here for any questions. Are there any questions? Yes.
You know, one of the qualities of Lord Shiva, he is always situated in his constitutional position. So I have the doubt that with the devotees, they are also always in their constitutional position. So is it that they have another extra quality compared to the other species and other lineages?
The question is that it was mentioned that Lord Shiva is Sadasvarupa Samprapta, that is always situated in his position, constitutional position. The Nitya Siddha living entities are also situated in their constitutional position. So is it that these jivas have one extra quality? Well, you see, Lord Shiva doesn't possess these five qualities in completeness, as I mentioned. Anshena Girishadishu. So these five qualities are present in perfection, in fullness, only in Krishna. Even in Shiva, they manifest only partly. As far as the jivas are concerned, these things do not exist. The conditioned jivas. And in the spiritual world, of course, there are the living entities who are Nitya Siddhas, yes? They are always eternally perfect. But Krishna here is speaking about, or rather Rupa Goswami is speaking about, these qualities by which these personalities like Lord Shiva and Krishna are always decorated. The living entity who is present in this world, the conditioned living entity, is born from the Tatastha Shakti, or the marginal energy of the Lord. That means that the living entity can sometimes be in Maya and sometimes in spiritual consciousness. But of course that is not so with the Nitya Siddhas, because they are always in the spiritual world. Any other question? Yes.
So it's not incomplete. But although we heard that, we hear that Janam Bhava Swarupa is Satyajanam. So how is that completeness and that?
The question is that for Lord Shiva we hear that he was Satchidananda Sandaranga, that he has a form of eternity, knowledge and bliss. But we also have a form of eternity, knowledge, bliss. We are also Satchidananda, yes. But you are Satchidananda, the platform of the soul, not the body. The soul is Satchidananda, but the body is absolutely the opposite. It is Asat, Achit and Nirananda. But Lord Shiva's body itself is almost quite Satchidananda. Not fully, but somewhat. Krishna's very body is completely Satchidananda Vigraha, the form of eternity, knowledge and bliss. Shiva's body is almost there, but not quite. For the living entity, the body is not at all Satchidananda. It's only the soul that is Satchidananda. Any other question? Yes. Yes. Lord, the question is that Lord Krishna's body and Lord Krishna, no difference. What about Lord Shiva and his body? So, no difference. He's almost there. He is just a form of Vishnu who has come in contact with material nature. Yes. Question is, in which category is Prabhupada? Nitya Siddha, Sadhana Siddha, Kripa Siddha. All we need to understand is he is Siddha. He is a perfected being. Why should we speculate? And Prabhupada has not told us, why should we speculate? All we know that he is perfect, and that's enough for us. He is Siddha. Certainly, without grace one cannot achieve perfection in life.
It means your Kripa and he was successful in the age of 70 years. It seems that he was Sadhana Siddha.
The question is that because he received the grace of his Guru, then at the age of 70, it indicates he is a Kripa Siddha, one who has attained perfection by mercy. On the other hand, he had to struggle, it shows that he was Sadhana Siddha. That's the question. Well, you see, Sadhana, that is our spiritual practices on one hand, and mercy on the other hand, are both required. Kripa Siddhas refer to those devotees who didn't have to perform any austerities or any practical devotional service in this life, and they became pure devotees directly by the grace of the Lord of the pure devotees. A sadhana siddha refers to one who performed his sadhana and then became a pure devotee. But we must remember that even for a sadhana siddha, kripa is essential. This is the important aspect of bhakti. One doesn't attain perfection simply by one sadhana. One attains perfection by kripa, by mercy. But the devotee attracts Krishna's mercy by his or her sincere endeavor in devotional service. So it doesn't mean that even if somebody is a sadhana siddha, that there is no mercy. There is no question of success without mercy. So mercy is there whether one is a kripa siddha or a sadhana siddha. Why should we bother and speculate to place him in any category?
Even the Kripa Siddha will perform in such a way that he is doing karma and will be Kripa.
Yes.
Because he must be example to
others, yes. So even a Kripa Siddha will perform activities to set the proper example. So we will not speculate. We will only go by what Srila Prabhupada has taught and spoken. All we are concerned is he is perfect, and that's enough for us. Yes? Any other question? Yes? Yes. The question is that, is there an example of how anger can be used in Krishna's service? Yes, there are two very famous examples Prabhupada gives many times. Yes, one is Hanuman burning Lanka. He couldn't have burnt Lanka, you know, when he was in a joyful mood or a light mood. Similarly, what's the second example? Arjuna. He also couldn't have fought the battle in a cheerful mood. He was ferocious in the battle, angry. Yes, Krishna actually incited him, provoked him to become angry by talking proper philosophy. Where is Mount Meru situated? Good question. It's right in the whole universe, but we cannot see. Otherwise, there would be a gold rush there. We don't have the, even though it's material, but it's very subtle, so we have no conception of how to see Mount Meru here. So we can understand so much for our senses. Senses cannot even reveal the material universe. And such a huge mountain as the Meru, the Sumeru mountain. Any other questions? Yes.
We say that Lord Vishnu is in contact with the modes of nature. What does it exactly mean?
The question is that it was said in the class that Vishnu in contact with the mode of nature is Shiva. What does it mean? It means exactly that. That Vishnu, as Vishnu, is never in touch with the three modes. He's always aloof, always transcendental. But if he has to be in contact with the three modes, then the form that he assumes to be in contact is called Lord Shiva.
He can perform all of this action in any way. Lord Vishnu can perform.
The question is that he can perform the work of destruction anywhere as Lord Narsingadev did, but Lord Narsingadev is not meant for the destruction of the universe. There are different forms or aspects of the Lord for different specific purposes. So Rudra is a specific form for the purpose of destruction of the universe. Narsingadev is an incarnation of the Lord directly. He is Vishnu Tattva. He is not Shiva Tattva. And he is there, he descends to protect his devotees and kill the demons who harass the devotees. Narsingadev is not involved in creating, destroying the universe at the time of destruction. The question is, Sankarshan is a presiding deity of... Yes. And Sankarshan is the original. And from Sankarshan, of course, this is a whole question of Vedic cosmology. And Sankarshan is the worshipable deity of Shiva. Sankarshan is also called Ram. And Lord Shiva is always meditating on this Sankarshan who is known as Ram. Rama Rameti Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasra Nama Vispulyam Rama Nama Varaname. I think everyone who comes here, whoever's next mobile phone rings, should be punished. So before you come in here, you should always keep your phones away. Yes.
When devotees are practicing devotion service, they find opposition from their near and dear.
Rudra principle.
They feel very inconvenient, or sometimes they feel hungry upon their own relatives, like sometimes father.
The question is that when one becomes a devotee, sometimes there's a lot of opposition from the family or friends and so on. So they become angry. So how does one deal with it? The devotee becomes angry. The devotee manifests the Rudra principle. The question is, how angry should the devotee become with his family and friends? Well, each case is a specific case, so one must
be very intelligent to ensure that one can continue one's Krishna consciousness nicely. If we can make our family members devotees, that is very nice. If we can't, then we should protect our Krishna consciousness and at the same time see that things go on very nicely. And we can take guidance in specific cases. Yes, Mataji, one question. Yes. The question is that in the Brahmacharya, after the material universe, there is Shiva Loka. Yes. So Lord Shiva resides there. The original Shambhu. What punishment shall we give now? Okay. So we have it now. Yeah, this is described in the Cake Purana. So Shiva Loka is the abode of Lord Shiva, Shambhu, and he resides there. It is an intermediary situation between the material world and the spiritual world. That is Shiva Loka. In that big chart, the BBT chart, it's a beautiful chart of the universe's spiritual world and the material creation, you will find Shiva Loka at that place. Somebody had a hand raised, last question? Yes.
When we are in material world, then we are infected by the most of nature. But now Sanatana is residing in the above, he possesses outside of material world. Still, you say that when Lord Vishnu comes in contact with most of nature,
the question is that if Lord Shiva is in Shiva Loka, which is outside of material nature, then how is he considered to be in contact with material nature? He is used by Lord Vishnu in the process of creation. Lord Shiva acts as the father of the living entities and of the creation on behalf of Lord Krishna or Lord Vishnu. When Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Yonishu Kaunteya Murtaya Sambhavantiya Tasam Brahma Mahadyonir Aham Bija Pradapita, that of all the species of life, I am the seed-giving father, he is speaking in his capacity as Shambhu or Lord Shiva. So Krishna is not directly the father. We know that Durga or Maya is the mother of the entire creation. So the many worshippers in India will worship, they will say Durga Ma, Ma Durga, Ma Kali, the mother, the divine mother. So they understand Durga is the mother. But who is the father? Who is the husband of Durga? Shiva. So Krishna acts as the father through the personality of Shiva. And because Shiva is in contact with Maya, Durga, that is how we can understand the context. But Krishna or Vishnu is not directly in contact. He is aloof. Yes.
So just like Lord Shiva so has passed on series of one of the best devotees, Vishnu, Prasadamani. Like we have a lot of passion. So how we can
the question is that Lord Shiva has a lot of passion and he is the best devotee, but we also have passion, how can we be devotees like him? But his passion and our passion are different. Prabhupada explains about Krishna that when Krishna kills the demons, it seems that he is exhibiting the mode of passion. Because when you're fighting and killing, then you have to be passionate. So Prabhupada explains, it may seem that there is a mode of passion, but Krishna is not there. In other words, that Krishna doesn't come under the clutches of the mode of passion, material mode of passion. Krishna can act in a way that appears to be in the mode of passion, but Krishna is never under the mode of passion. So Lord Shiva is transcendentally situated because he is a great devotee of the Lord. So he is not under the clutches of the three modes the way the ordinary conditioned living entity is. But because he is in contact, there is a trace of that influence. And as far as his other forms like Rudra are concerned, they are specific forms meant for this purpose of destruction for which passion and ignorance has to be there. So he takes these specific forms with a purpose. One last question. Yes. Devi Dham. The question is, what is Devi Dham in that map? Devi Dham refers to the material world, because this is the world of Devi or Durga. And then there is Shivaloka, there is the Brahma Jyoti, and then there is Vaikuntha planets, and the highest of the Vaikuntha planets is Goloka Vrindavan. And in that very Goloka Vrindavan, which manifests here in this material world, we are all seated here in Prabhupada's shelter. So with this understanding, we can close our session for today. So thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Gaur Premanande.